This is Thinking Back from KBIA and the Thinking Out Loud podcast. It's Darren. This week on Thinking Out Loud, we did a program talking about education. Had my friend Bonnie Connolly in here from Columbia Public Schools talking about summer school. And so I thought it would be kind of cool for this week's Thinking Back to be about education. So I started digging into the archives and I found this conversation that I had with Elliot Battle, who was one of the legendary educators in our community. He was one of the very first teachers after the schools were desegregated, after teaching at Douglas High School before desegregation. His wife was also a legendary educator here in Columbia, and the namesake of Muriel Battle High School. And so here's a conversation I had quite some years ago with Elliot Battle, talking about schools and education, from Thinking Back and the KBIA Thinking Out Loud podcast. Good evening. This is Thinking Out Loud. Tonight on the show, Columbia rededicated this week a memorial honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. Columbia's memorial is a unique work of art, and it's joined to a garden honoring two of the great leaders in our community, Elliot and Muriel Battle. I'm so thrilled tonight to share part of a conversation I had with Elliot Battle. We talk about Dr. King and about growing up in the South during segregation, about Columbia's schools and the struggles of desegregation here. Dr. Battle was in Hickman High and talks about those early years of desegregation and about a life's partnership and love with another great educator, his wife Muriel. We meet Elliot Battle and visit with the Arizona artist who designed our wonderful Martin Luther King Memorial here in Columbia. It's all on Thinking Out Loud next on KBIA. Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud. I'm Darren Helwedge. There's something so great about getting to do this job and this show. Every now and then, I get to this point in the process where I'm doing an introduction, just getting a show started and trying to find the words to tell you about a conversation I get to bring you tonight about someone that just makes me so glad I had the honor of getting to talk to them for a while. This is one of those shows tonight. We're going to talk with Elliot Battle this evening. And as fact is, the community certainly has benefited from his generosity for so many years. The same has happened to me. He was so generous with his time that, in fact, what we will have tonight is part one of what will be a two-part conversation with Elliot Battle. We'll be able to hear some of this tonight, and then we'll bring you some more next Tuesday night on Thinking Out Loud. There's not a word of this interview that I could conscious edit out. Not one word. So tonight we'll bring you the first part of this interview as we visit with Dr. Battle about what it meant to him to have been honored last night at the rededication of the Martin Luther King Memorial and the Battle Garden there, named for him and his wife. And we'll bring you that conversation with Elliot Battle, the first part of that here in just a moment. Also on tonight's show, I had the great pleasure earlier this week of talking to Barbara Grigudis. Now, she's a very prominent artist. She has public art in a lot of our major cities. I looked at the list. I've been to Philadelphia. I've been to Denver. I've been to St. Paul. I've been to Seattle. And her work is in all of those cities and a lot of other places, including the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial at Battle Garden, which she designed here in Columbia. We're going to talk about her artistic vision of this memorial, talk about why this memorial is so meaningful, why Columbia has done more than just name a street after Dr. King like everybody else does. First, though, here's part one of a really wonderful visit I got to have with Elliot Battle on Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. And, of course, yesterday, the rededication ceremony for the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial here in Columbia and the Battle Garden, which honors Dr. Battle and his wife as well, Muriel Battle. Dr. Battle, thank you for the time today so much.
So happy to give it to you.
I'd like to, first of all, have you tell me about last night. What was the ceremony like for you?
It was a really beautiful experience to sit there and to listen to the different ones who spoke and the singers. It was just ecstatic.
It sounded like really a wonderful ceremony, and unfortunately, I had a previous engagement with the Humane Society board meeting and wasn't able to be there. I had a couple of people I've spoken with that were there that really thought it was very wonderful. I assume that the Reverend Ruffin, who's always a wonderful speaker, his dramatization must have been very moving.
It was outstanding. I've heard him on many occasions, of course. I was as impressed again last night with his performance as I've been with all of the others that I've ever heard. He was just great.
What do you think of the newly redone memorial and garden area?
It's very impressive. I went over there several times during the time that they were working on it, and to see the efforts that were done by Parks and Recreation and the pride that they took in assuring that the gardens were going to be in super shape. But then to see Dr. King's memorial as it was redone, I watched them as they relayed tile and as they took their pride in getting it done. It was just an impressive experience.
One of the themes in the conversations about this topic, and we visited on last night's show with Susan Stallcup Gray. We also visited for tonight's show with the artist that designed this memorial, is the fact that a lot of communities throw Martin Luther King's name up on a street. We could have just named Providence Road to pick one out of thin air, or Stadium Boulevard, whatever. We could have just named a street. Okay, this is going to be Martin Luther King Street, and that's all the more a lot of communities do, and they consider it, okay, we're finished now. Columbia went to a lot of efforts to do something a little bit different and that had more meaning to it, I think. Don't you agree that this is something
that's... I agree with you. Yeah. It's the second largest memorial to Dr. King in the country, second only to the one in Atlanta. And I've driven down quite a few Martin Luther King boulevards in various cities around the country. And they are impressive, but to go to sit in a serene spot like around his memorial here in Columbia is something that everyone should have the opportunity to experience. It's a beautiful tribute to him, and I'm very impressed with this decision to go the route that Columbia did rather than just name a street or a boulevard for him.
Elliot Battle, our guest yesterday, the rededication not only of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial here in Columbia, but also the Battle Garden, which honors Elliot Battle and his wife Muriel. 1991, as the decision is being made to put the memorial together and to do things kind of in the way that they're being done, and I can't remember off the top of my head if the decision was made at that point to do the garden or if something was done a little bit later, but tell me about your feelings when you first found out that there was going to be a garden honoring you and Mrs. Battle there.
I was really amazed. I know that we have contributed to a few things to Columbia's environment, to the children of Columbia, and to society here totally. But we did it as a result of our own desires to really be involved in Columbia and to see that Columbia was going to be a better city than the way we found it when we first arrived.
Were it not for the fact that we've had others kind of talk about the monumental contributions that you and Muriel have made to the community, I'd never let you get away with this business of just a few things. But I'll let you go ahead and do that because we've had others describe some of the wonderful things you guys have contributed. I don't want to let you get away with too much modesty with that because they really have been very substantial contributions to the community, certainly. And the fact that with Muriel no longer with us, that her name's a part of that, that her wonderful, it's such a beautiful picture is still up at West Junior High School, where this community's not going to let her be forgotten. And I know that's got to mean a lot to
you. You're so right. And as I was about to leave last night, one of the members of the Parks Facility Office asked if I had seen the bench that had been put there in Muriel's honor, which I had not. So I made the trip back again and was one of the few people still at the area and got a chance to view that beautiful tribute to her with the bench. And, of course, it was kind of ironic as I looked at the bench that's right next to it, and I'm feeling sure that that one is there waiting for my demise, and then my name will be put there, but it was...
hopefully not too soon. It can kind of sit there without a name on it for the moment.
Right, I don't want to rush that, but, but I'll be proud to have my name there right next to hers and for duration.
Elliot Battle with us, of course, last night, the rededication of the Battle Garden in addition to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. And Dr. Battle, I'd like to have you kind of talk a little bit about some of the time that you spent in the Columbia schools, starting with kind of talking about the time that you were at Douglas High School. There are obviously a lot of very dark memories that go along with school segregation. At the same time, as I run into people who are alums of Douglas from the time when there was segregation in the school, there seems to be a lot of pride. That was a good school.
It was an outstanding school, and it did so much for so many years. But it was a separate institution and one of those kind of things that never should have ever occurred either here or throughout the country with similar kind of schools that they had required for blacks. But even backing up beyond before then, let me tell you a few things that occurred that I thought about as I sat and looked at the Martin Luther King Memorial. I grew up myself in Alabama down in Mobile, and during the same period that Dr. King was growing up. And I worked at a hotel when I was in high school as a busboy in Mobile. And in the hotel, the only black people who could enter would be those of us who were there to do the work in the kitchen or the cleaning work.
Right.
Which, of course, was pretty tragic to think that you couldn't sleep in a hotel merely because you were black. When I went to the Army, I was on the bus going from Mobile to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I looked out the window in Georgia before I got to Fort Benning and saw a large road sign that says, "Vote for," and I don't remember the name of the person nor for what role he was trying to aspire to, but "Vote for this person who believes in the democratic ideals of white supremacy." When I went to register to vote in Mobile, the next day, read in the paper that three blacks had registered to vote and 300-odd whites had. And I didn't find out until the second day. I was not among the three because I didn't get I was too far back in the line. I was about number seven. But when I went the next morning, I was number four, and I did make it in, and I found out why so few had registered. We had to interpret the Constitution, the blacks who were going to register, to a man who could not pronounce the word Constitution. So when I think about the kinds of things that occurred prior to Dr. King's fights that to make sure that these kind of things didn't no longer happen in our country, I have been so in awe of the man. Dr. King was just an icon. Douglas School itself, when I first came to Columbia, there were the principal and myself as assistant principal and counselor, and about 12 teachers in the high school area, junior high and senior high, and eight or nine in the elementary section. And the children all seeing models who reflected themselves, that is, who were black right along with them. And I think this was a very special thing that gave the children some reasons to really perform differently than Not that I think integration, of course, is the better route, but it was so great to have youngsters being able to look up and see persons who had achieved, just as I was able to look up and see Dr. Carver when I went to Tuskegee as a person who had achieved. So it served a purpose, the separate but unequal school, but it's something that needed to have come to an end.
The need to have a mentor, the need for instance, a young African American boy to see an African American man and a role model, as you describe, I guess doesn't require separate schools. The possibilities to do that are still there with integrated schools, and you've certainly had the opportunity to do that with any number of young people through the community.
You're so right, and I'm pleased to see each year there seems to be expansion of African Americans as in the schools as fast as they can get them to come to the smaller city of Columbia.
Sure. And that is part one of my visit with Elliot Battle. We'll bring you part two next Tuesday night on Thinking Out Loud. This is Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. In a moment, the artist who designed Columbia's Martin Luther King Memorial at Battle Garden. First, let me remind you quickly about our website. Just go to kbia.org and click on Thinking Out Loud. I'm making extra certain to get it updated today to include last night's Arts on Monday program. Our guest was Susan Stalkup Gray, who, along with Elliot Battle, co-chaired the committee responsible for putting the Memorial Restoration Project together. We talk a lot about how the memorial first came about some of the damage that was caused by rain and the elements, and how they got the restoration done. She's another person that's done a lot for the community, and that's a good program, especially because, just in one of those ironies and the way things work out sometimes, the program aired while the memorial restoration was going on. So if you were at the ceremony last night and missed this program, I do hope you'll go to kbia.org, click on Thinking Out Loud, and you can hear last night's program with Susan Stalkup Gray. More about the Martin Luther King Memorial in Columbia and some of our past Thinking Out Loud programs. As always, my email is thinking@kbia.org. Love to hear your comments on the program, suggestions for guests on future Thinking Out Loud shows. Next, Barbara Grigudis. She's a great artist, has created public art in many of our nation's cities, and she designed this memorial. We discuss the process of putting it together and the significance of Dr. King to her, how she was able to put that into this wonderful piece of art. It's KBIA, your NPR station. Darren Helwedge with Barbara Grigudis of Tucson, Arizona. She was the designer and the artist that put together our Martin Luther King Memorial here in Columbia, and has been a part of the restoration as it's being rededicated. And Barbara, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
I want to hear a little bit, first of all, about the process of putting this all together. I understand there was a competition, obviously folks from all over the country, and talk about getting involved with that.
Well, this kind of a memorial, of course, is a special project, so I was interested in competing for it, which I did. I think you described it perfectly. There was a national competition, and my design got selected. And then I had some collaboration with the city. As you well know, the city had designed a park there at Battle Garden. And so the task of fitting the memorial into the site was a collaborative effort with the City of Columbia, with their landscape department. So really a lot of people had something to do with this. I wasn't alone. And I think the community effort here is something that should be noted. I think that that's a pretty major part of all of this.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about the memorial and some of the things that you had in mind from the artistic standpoint as you were putting it together.
Well, this is a memorial for a community, so I wanted the community to be able to use it. So the design of the memorial really centers on an amphitheater. And at the top of the amphitheater are eight columns that have a face of granite on which is etched eight quotes by Dr. King. And I had an American literary specialist, Dr. Linda Bolton, select those quotes because we wanted to put in quotes that had a lot of meaning, and Dr. King said so many wonderful things. There was a lot to choose from, not just the quotes that have become popular, but his writings are really very profound. So the selection process of these quotes was actually done by a person who specializes in American literature.
Well, and I must admit that I am no expert in your field at all, but the way that it was designed, there must have been something. You guys must have known what you were doing in putting this together, because I can't imagine anybody coming up there and not reading them. I've gone, and every time you walk away and you've read a couple of them, maybe for the 20th time, but it's obvious that there is a message here rather than just, hey, there was this guy, his name was Martin Luther King, don't forget, which is kind of, you know, I realize the main part of a memorial, but there's a message beyond that, obviously, here.
Well, I think Dr. King is probably one of the major figures of the 20th century, historically, and I think as we advance and there's more history, that seems to prove more and more correct, that he was a visionary, and as an artist, it's really challenging to make a piece of art that really reflects that individual and such an amazing individual. So that's really the task when you make a memorial or design a memorial of this type, is to reflect the greatness of the person. And we felt that this person would be very well reflected through his words, which were just amazing. He said some very amazing things, and they haunt you still. These, if you know, out of context, in context, they're really incredible. And he did so much for this country. So there are a lot of layers of Dr. King's life that we tried to reflect in, that I tried to reflect in this memorial.
Sure.
So then there's the amphitheater, and the community can use this. That's a very important element of this. And I think the community has used it. And then at the foot of the amphitheater is a spiral walkway. And that walkway is granite, and it's composed of 39 and a half pavers, or stepping stones. And that reflects the number of years that Dr. King lived.
I see.
And then there's the blue tile, which I made in my studio. And the blue is symbolic. For me, blue connects you to life forces, water, sky, air, and I felt that really Dr. King's message was about life in general. And so that's kind of the connection to the larger world.
I am, if nothing else had come out of this interview, I am delighted to be able to have you say that and to get what that's about a little bit more. I always thought those were so beautiful. I just loved that color, that dark, rich blue, and I just thought it was real pretty. I didn't realize there was more to it than just it being a pretty color.
Well, thank you, but I think in this kind of work, there's lots of symbolism, and there has to be. There has to be lots of layers of meaning, so I'm very happy that you could relate to it just in an aesthetic manner. That makes me feel good, of course.
Sure. We're talking with Barbara Grigutis. She's from Tucson, Arizona, the artist that helped design the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial at Battle Garden, which is being rededicated here in Columbia. One of the things I visited with Susan Stallcup Gray from the committee about is the fact that I had recently seen a TV program in which an African-American TV producer kind of traveled from city to city and found all of these cities where they'd taken an old street, renamed it Martin Luther King, and just that was kind of the extent of it. In some places, it was a prominent street through the middle of town, and there were other things about it that made it significant. In other places, they changed the street sign and said, okay, we're done now. There's obviously a lot more to this than just having renamed one of the big streets in Columbia Martin Luther King and said, okay, we're done now. How much about the community did they give you to work with, and how much of this was unique to Columbia rather than just being a memorial to Martin Luther King that they could pick up and drop in the middle of Oregon or New Hampshire or whatever?
Well, this memorial was really designed for a site, you know. I know that the community had worked very hard to get that site in the park, and the land drops there, so it was designed for the site, more or less. Of course, it had to be fit in perfectly
sure.
in the landscaping later on, but I think, to the community's credit, that they worked really hard to get a really special site to put a memorial where there's a garden all the way around it so that it's more than just a street, as you just said. And it's something that the community can come to and reflect and contemplate. It's a place where an individual can go to and read the quotes. You can just sit there and be peaceful and have a peaceful experience.
Right, right.
And that's really, I really want to say again that the community worked really hard to get this site, and that's really what's very special here.
You've got to think about that a moment. This is a major state highway. That's a four-lane road. I drive past it at least four times every day. Everybody in town, practically, thousands and thousands of people drive past it. That would be an awfully attractive site for a convenience store or a restaurant or whatever.
Probably.
And the fact that they've been able to hold on to it for something like the trail and like this memorial is fascinating. The fact that there was the, not necessarily damage, it wasn't crumbling or anything like that, but there was some water damage, particularly to the tiles, and the fact that there's been this much restoration to it, I hope makes you aware of how much this means to Columbia.
I think, you know, I've said this now, I've repeated myself, but I mean it. It's an incredible community effort, and I really have to pay tribute to Marie Hunter here, who has worked so hard to get this restored. I think you probably know this, but this site at one point in its evolution was actually a landfill.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think there was some water seeping up from down below. So it was a difficult site to work in. And to her credit, they have isolated the problem. And it's a tremendous effort. I mean, it's just a tremendous effort. And to have raised the money, it's just phenomenal. And I'm just really thrilled about it.
Have you done a lot of works like this? Because I was just thinking, it's obvious in visiting with you that you've not come to Columbia a lot of times, that it's not like a city that you've grown up in. It's not a city that you lived in for many years. And yet your work is such a big part of Columbia and something that we all take so much pride in. Have you done a lot of things like this? That must be so great to have a city 1,000 miles away where your work is so important to so many people.
Well, I'm a public artist, and yes, it is very special, and I do a lot of work all over the country, public pieces, and I would say some are received more, some are received less. There's no question that the City of Columbia has really embraced this project, and, you know, if you want to see some of my other works, just Google me, and quite a bit will come up.
Oh, okay, great.
You can see what else I've done.
Okay, well, I was kind of interested in finding out more about that, so we'll definitely do that. It's been a tremendous community project. I'm delighted that you got Marie's name mentioned there, because I think she might have gotten overlooked, and she certainly deserves a lot of credit in putting this together and a lot of the other art that Columbians can enjoy through her work with the City of Columbia. So we certainly appreciate you doing that, and again, the artist from Tucson, Arizona, Barbara Grigutis. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to jump in here for just a second. Real quick reminder that this is a Thinking Back podcast for Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Darren Helwedge here. This is a program that we did back in, I think, 06, where we talked with Elliot Battle, and as you just heard, with the designer of our Martin Luther King Memorial here in Columbia. Now, we're going to bring you part two of that conversation in just a second. If you're finding this on our website, I want to remind you that you can, at the same site, subscribe to the podcast and get all of the Thinking Out Loud programs and interviews that we do as we shove those out there, and also all of these Thinking Back. I've got an archive, just about 20 years, maybe 1,000 programs or close to it, and some of them are very dated and not interesting at all, but a lot of them are, I think, quite interesting, including this conversation I got to have with Elliot Battle. So let's get back to it, but please remember to subscribe to the podcast. Thank you. Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud. Tonight on the program, we present part two of our interview with Elliot Battle. We'll hear more about the desegregation of Columbia schools from Mr. Battle, who was the first African-American teacher in the Columbia District following desegregation, about the experience of Elliot and his wife Muriel Battle in a life's work in education in our town, and about his thoughts on the current state of education, plus the rededication of the Battle Garden at Columbia's Martin Luther King Memorial, a personal interview with one of the great leaders and historical figures in Columbia, and just a real good guy, Elliot Battle. I'm Thinking Out Loud. It's next from KBIA, your NPR station. And good evening. Welcome to Thinking Out Loud. I'm Darren Hellwedge. Tonight, part two of my visit with Elliot Battle on the occasion of last week's rededication of the Battle Garden. Still a lot to bring you. I'm not going to need to do much more introduction. Here's more with Elliot Battle on KBIA's Thinking Out Loud. Talk a little bit about what it was like once the schools were integrating. We hear so much about the difficulties that occurred in larger cities, and there can't be any place where it just went swimmingly and perfectly and there were no problems at all, I imagine.
No, it wasn't perfect here either, of course. Some of the students came into the school with the attitude that things were not going to be good for them as far as the transfer from Douglas to Hickman. Rockbridge had not yet opened, but Hickman was the senior high school that they all went into. And I went there as the only black staff there for a three-year period before Mrs. Wiggins came in as an English teacher. A few years later, some additional ones came. There got to be as many as six at one time, black teachers among 100-odd teachers totally.
Mm-hmm.
But the students, there were some activities that took place that were not ideal by any means. There was one teacher who thought that she was doing, I guess she thought that she was a good job of putting up pictures that the students had done, but one student had drawn a black face with the white lips and that sort of thing, along with the other pictures that went on the bulletin board went that picture. And, of course, the students in the class, the black students, walked out of the class, which was a correct thing to have done at that time. Another teacher who taught social studies during that early period of integration had some signs when he was teaching about the civil about the war. He had some signs that had authentic niggers for sale signs.
Mm-hmm.
He put that up, and of course a black student who walks in and sees the word nigger on the board was just incensed. So the entire class walked out and went out and sat out by the flag of the school.
The white and the black students?
No, only the black
students. Okay, the black students left the classroom.
Which, of course, these kind of things were rare, but even occurring one time was one too many. And, of course, this was insensitivity on the parts of the teachers. They were young teachers who were really thinking that, boy, putting up something like this is, you know, an authentic sign. It was a replica of a real sign that had occurred back in the earlier years, but it was not an acceptable thing that students moving from a black school into an integrated school were ready to accept and did not choose to, and therefore they had a nice walkout. There were several incidents where students felt that going from the segregated school, going from the Douglas as a segregated school into Hickman and not being chosen when they tried out for various things such as cheerleading, and they felt that they were not treated fairly, and things were kept white as far as those kind of activities were concerned. Their involvement as officers and in classes at the segregated school, of course, they were totally presidents right on down the line of their classes. And then we got to Hickman being in a vast minority. it was rare for one to be selected to an office. Well, these were things that only time has been able to correct, and I'm pleased to see that there's a lot more involvement by both groups, white and black, in mm-hmm. schools together.
I'm interested in that era. Obviously, there were some teachers who were making very poor decisions and just obviously not sensitive at all to the needs of the black kids, or what the reaction might have been, what it must have felt like to walk in and, for instance, see the sign you described there.
Right.
There must also, though, have been some leadership within the district that was very helpful and that did some good things back in that time, and I want to hear about that also.
Oh, there were outstanding teachers, black and white,
mm-hmm.
who assured that the students were as comfortable in the different setting as they had been in their previous segregated setting. There were teachers who made a point to show that they were not themselves deeply ingrained with prejudice, who invited the youngsters, black and white, to their homes for private sessions of involvement with just socializing,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. So it turned out that the majority were doing the things as they ought to have been done, rather than creating even more problems for youngsters.
Elliot Battle with us. Of course, yesterday was the rededication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial here in Columbia, along with the Battle Gardens at that same location, honoring Dr. Battle and his wife Muriel, as we're visiting here on KBIA. It's Thinking Out Loud, and I'm Darren Helwedge. Dr. Battle, there are individual achievements and things that happened through your careers that were tremendous achievements as individuals. At the same time, it's awfully easy to think of you and Muriel as a team and the things that you accomplished as sort of a team effort. At what point did you meet Muriel, and was she along as the events we were just discussing were taking place? When did you meet her, and when did you get married?
Well, I met Muriel when she was 3 years old.
No kidding!
We grew up in the same city of Mobile, Alabama.
Okay.
Muriel's grandfather was the first black physician in Mobile, and Muriel's father was editor and publisher of a newspaper. I was a paper boy for Mr. Williams, and when I participated as a senior in high school in an oratorical contest, he was a mentor for me. I would go down to his home and practice my speech that I was going to give at the oratorical contest that was sponsored by the Elks Club in Mobile. And Muriel was just a little girl with pigtails peeping around the door as I was speaking. So I knew her when she was just a child.
Oh, great.
She's several years my junior.
Okay.
And then I went to the Army and came home on furlough. And my younger brother, who was a high school classmate of hers, was going to the prom. And of course, I had a uniform. I didn't have to get a tuxedo, but they were going to that prom, and he invited me to go along with him and his date. And when I got to this prom and saw this young lady who I had known when she was a child, no longer a child.
Right.
I allowed her, isn't that terrible? but I did not interfere with her, date that she had come to the prom with, but I danced with her several times, and from that point on, I knew that she was going to be someone that I was going to spend my life with.
How wonderful. Well, I'm a little surprised I've not heard some of that in the past, but I'm glad we got the opportunity to talk about that story and get some of that background there, because I just thought the world of Muriel, and it's great to hear that part of your history there. When did you come to Colombia and why?
We came to Colombia in 1956. I had gone to Tuskegee and had studied, of all things, coming from a city, but Dr. Carver was still at Tuskegee, and I thought that I was going to maybe be a second Dr. Carver, until I found out when I got to school that I was not nearly the smart student as I had thought I was in high school. And I came to Poplar Bluff, Missouri, to teach agriculture immediately when I got my degree. I got a bachelor's and a master's in agriculture from Tuskegee, and I taught veterans agriculture in Poplar Bluff. I moved from there to Boonville for 1 year. I became principal of a school at Dalton, Missouri, which was operating for students who came from about 7 or 8 different counties into the segregated school where their school districts paid the state of Missouri tuition, and the state paid $200,000 to operate the Dalton School, which had students coming from every place, from Carrollton, Brookfield, Marceline, Glasgow, Fayette, all the towns that hadn't integrated schools. So from 53 to 56, I was there. And Dr. Aslin, who was the superintendent of schools here, heard about some of the things that we were doing at Dalton, and he contacted me about coming to Columbia as an assistant principal and a counselor. And I was not a trained counselor, but they were in the process of employing counselors in all of the schools and needed someone to be at Douglas, so they hired me as an assistant principal and counselor there and hired Muriel as a first-grade teacher. We left there, and I went over to Hickman in 1960, and she went over to West Junior when West Junior opened up in 1963. And then we both went back to the university to get a master's, and she got her master's and specialist and a doctorate, and then was promoted from principalship to assistant superintendent and associate superintendent of schools. And we both had just fantastic careers in the system. There's no place that, and we've traveled extensively. We've been all over most of the country and out of the country to Europe several times, to Alaska and other places, Japan. But there's no place I've ever been that I would rather live than here in Columbia.
Terrific. Terrific. That's always, I agree, but it's always encouraging to hear other people say that. Elliot Battle, our guest, as we're talking about some of the history of his time in the Columbia Public Schools as they have rededicated the memorial both to Dr. Martin Luther King and to Elliot Battle and his wife Muriel at the Battle Gardens at the Martin Luther King Memorial here in Columbia. Here on KBIA. Now, you mentioned that Muriel was the principal at West Junior High School back in, I think it was about 78, would have been the first African-American principal in the school district. And
right.
What was that like?
It's
obvious that you'd been at West.
And she enjoyed every bit of it. I heard Muriel speak several times to groups and tell them that when she was teaching first grade, that was the most enjoyable job she ever had. And then when she was principal, well, she was a teacher first at West Junior, and she enjoyed that more than she did anything else she had done. And then when she became principal, she knew that she had really reached the apex of her career. But then, of course, when she became the associate superintendent and worked with Dr. Thompson there in that capacity, she was really the most satisfied worker in the city next to me. But that's the way she was. She loved everything she did, and she immersed herself so deeply into all of the things that she became involved with, both professionally as well as the various civic activities in which she involved herself.
You described, when we first started, some very ugly things that you encountered growing up in Alabama, traveling into Georgia, and the time that you spent in the service and some of the travels that you did there. And I'm sure there could be many more memories of that. As you were teaching in the schools and as your wife was teaching in the schools, Were the young people that you were encountering, both the black kids and the white kids, fully aware of what was really going on? We're not talking about another century. We're not talking about another species. We're not talking about another planet. We're talking about people like you that are alive today that saw these things happen in their lifetime. Were the kids you were teaching really aware of how bad it was?
I doubt it. I don't think that, I think that there's so much in history that should never be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much in it that we ought to assure, and I do, as frequently as possible, remind persons of the way it was, because I believe that you achieve more, you aspire for more, when you know what others have had to struggle with in the past to allow you to reach the spot that you currently are. I feel so strongly that young, especially African Americans, need to be aware of all of the difficulties that their forefathers have gone through. I knew what struggles my ancestry and the persons before me had in order to reach the levels that they reached. And I knew that I had to be determined that I was going to climb up the ladder higher as a result of where they had struggled to bring me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that every generation needs to do a similar kind of thing. And unless you know these struggles, you don't have that incentive to really climb.
It is such work to make that climb, and to make it all the more difficult by reaching back and helping others is something of which one should be quite proud. I was reading an article from late last year in the Tribune with David Ballinger, who of course served with distinction for so many years on the Columbia Board of Education, and he talked about when he wanted to do something wrong as he was growing up. You were always there, kind of helping out with the kids in the community. Tell me about that, about this generation of young people that are grown-ups that are in leadership roles in the city of Columbia that maybe you got to kind of have a role in their raising.
Well, that's the beauty of having worked so long within the same city. There's no place that I go, even right next door to where I live, right across the area, is a service station. And the man who operates that and owns it is a young man that I had known when he was in high school.
That's Ross Buttricks, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, very good friend of mine. This is the little Sinclair station. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's a fantastic young man.
Yes.
And it gives me a feeling of pride to know that I had some little bit in working with him to maybe encourage him to really aspire to do something worthwhile for himself.
Right.
I go out to get a dent repaired in my automobile and see Rocky Phillippe, who is a young man who owns and operates a business. I go to the banks. I go to almost any place in the city. And when you've worked at a place for 38 years and worked with young people, I go to eat my breakfast every morning at Hy-Vee, and it's a rare day that someone doesn't come up who is a Hickman graduate and meet and talk with me, no matter what level he's achieved. But they remember, at least, that this older gentleman at one time tried to help them to do something worthwhile with themselves. And that it's such an inspiration to me to realize that their efforts were not in vain.
I want to give you a chance to brag on a topic that I suspect you could probably do a little bit of bragging on, and that is the fact that in addition to touching the lives of so many young people through the Columbia schools, you and Muriel raised a house full of kids yourself that have turned out to be pretty good folks, I understand. I know Donna quite well, but tell me a little bit about your own kids and your family.
Well, now you've really reached the topic I can really brag on.
I thought I might.
Seriously, we were very fortunate that they had leaders that from the beginning. Muriel, of course, began teaching immediately when we came to Columbia, and we had to have care for them. They went down to the North Stewart Nursery School, and they had a woman by the name of Miss Estes, and who was in charge of the North Stewart Nursery School, and a Mrs. Kelly, and a Mrs. Davis, who recently passed. And they were really assistance to us in seeing that those kids got the right kind of training and background that was going to assist them in making proper choices. Those four have all grown up to be just fantastic young people. Two of them, of course, were here for the occasion last evening. But my youngest, Elliot Jr., is a dermatologist. He is Harvard trained. After getting his degree, he went to Harvard and specialized in the use of the laser with darker skin, and he travels extensively around the world teaching dermatologists how to use a particular laser that he developed. And I've made several trips with him. I've been to Florence, Italy, and I've been to Spain with him, and I'm going to Brazil in October with him. He makes me sit back in awe to think that this little kid who at one time I wasn't sure was going to finish high school has developed into such a man. Then my youngest daughter, just moved back to Columbia. She built a home over in the grasslands, and she and her husband, who's deceased, had owned several McDonald's franchises in Kansas City. She's deciding what she's going to be doing here in Columbia, has not yet decided, but is going to be doing something here in the city professionally. My next daughter is an attorney in Chicago and works with abused and neglected children, loves what she does. And then the oldest daughter, Donna, who was the one that you knew,
right,
who worked with the Tribune and then the Missourian as a foods editor, is the associate foods editor and test kitchen director at the Chicago Tribune. So they all four have very worthwhile positions, and they basically are fantastic people. So Muriel and I are both proud of their accomplishments.
You mentioned having breakfast at Hy-Vee every day, but tell me a little bit about what you're up to these days. Certainly, retirement has its advantages, and it sounds like you're getting some traveling done.
Well, I just got back last week from a family reunion down in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And I really wasn't sure that I was going to be able to make the trip because in June I had been out to Providence, Rhode Island to my grandson's graduation from college, and I had had a physical examination prior to going there, and when I returned, I had a notice from my physician that I had a problem, and I did have a physical difficulty. I had a cancer on a kidney, and I had to have this operation, so I wasn't sure that I would have recuperated enough to make it to this reunion, but being so young, I did recuperate now, and I'm doing very well now.
Good, good. I know folks will be relieved to hear that. I know that even at a very relatively early time in your career, the time after there was the desegregation and the closing of the Douglas School as the quote-unquote black school, there was the continuing education program and some ideas in what would be eventually kind of referred to as alternative education and some really kind of cutting-edge stuff that was happening there at the Douglas Building, even in the late 60s, that you guys were involved with. There were always ideas that you guys were helping to develop and helping to promote in our community that were pretty forward-thinking. Do you still have some involvement and some thoughts on what happens in our schools in Columbia?
I have worked on several committees with the school, and I'm so pleased to see Dr. Chase with her dynamic personality have come into the system and be at the helm of the school district. I work with them as best I can. We've got Mr. Calloway, who has recently gotten on the school board,
mm-hmm.
who is African-American, who is a member of our Minority Men's Network. That's an organization with which I'm very much involved. Dr. Strickland, Arthur Strickland, who was the first black professor at the university, he and I founded that some 20 years ago, and we are pleased to see that it's still an organization that is doing some things to promote young people's continuance in after high school education,
okay.
college or vocational training. We have given scholarships to several students who are still going ahead and developing themselves in college, and we're proud of some of the accomplishments that they're making.
We talked when we first started about there being a bench with Muriel's name on it and another one that will eventually have yours, and we hope that there's still some good time between now and then. Before your name is to appear on that bench, is there anything that you'd really like to accomplish that you've not gotten done yet, or anything you'd really like to see?
Well, one of the things that I had thought when I had stopped teaching and stopped working in the school system was I hadn't really done all of the things I wanted to do. So I did write a little book that was called A Letter to Young Black Men, and You Don't Find Role Models on Street Corners was subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
I plan to hopefully get memoirs written, and I'm in the process now of doing some dictating on a little mic to assure that I get down what I want to print. But I do want to hopefully write something that's going to be encouraging to others and to let others realize that you don't give up,
mm-hmm.
that you just have to focus on what you want to do in life and work toward accomplishing it.
Well, what a guy. Elliot Battle, that is part two of my interview with Dr. Battle. You can hear the whole thing on my website. Just go to kbia.org and click on Thinking Out Loud. Our thanks so much for the generous time with Elliot Battle. Thanks so much to him. Thanks to you for listening as well. We'll be back with Thinking Out Loud Fridays at Mizzou with another Arts on Monday next week and again next Tuesday with Thinking Out Loud. Till then, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening. And there you have it, this Thinking Back visit with Elliot Battle. I always want to follow up at the end of these programs and let you know about them. I had that chance to do that interview back in 2006. I had been friends with Elliot for quite some time by that point. Muriel Battle, his wife, died in 2003. And Elliot died very nearly 10 years ago in June of 2013 after suffering injuries in a car crash. So neither of them is with us any longer, sadly, but both are remembered here in Columbia in a way that is very appropriate and prominent, in addition to the Battle Garden, which we discussed at the MKT Trail entrance there on Stadium Boulevard. You see Muriel Battle High School and Elliot Battle Elementary School nearby. Their names will be remembered for many, many years on those great buildings. This is Thinking Back. It is a series that we are doing going through the archives of nearly 20 years of Thinking Out Loud programs. There are a lot of interviews in here that we're going to gradually be releasing. I think the next one we're going to put out there is my talk with Ray Beck back when he was city manager of Columbia. And that was a fun one. I think you'll enjoy hearing that. And I actually got to talk to Ray Beck a couple of weeks ago. He's still with us, fortunately. Glad to hear that. And so we'll make that available here in the next week or so. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast here. Just go to kbia.org, programs, for Thinking Out Loud, and while you're there, you can subscribe to the podcast pretty much any way that you get your podcasts. This is Darren Helwedge. Thanks for listening.